Walk Two Moons by Sharon Kreacher. Chapter 1, Face of the Window. Gramps says that I am a country girl at heart, and that is true. I have lived most of my 13 years in Bybanks, Kentucky, which is not much more than a caboodle of houses roosting in a green spot alongside the Ohio River. Just over a year ago, my father plucked me up like a weed and took me and all our belongings. No, that isn't true. He did not bring the willow tree, the chestnut, the maple, the hayloft, or the swimming hole, which all belonged to me. And we drove 300 miles straight north and stopped in front of a house in Euclid, Ohio. No trees, I said. This is where we're going to live. No, my father said. This is Margaret's house. The front door of the house opened, and a lady with wild red hair stood there. I looked up and down the street. The houses were all jammed together like a row of birdhouses. In front of each house was a tiny square of grass, and in front of that was a thin gray sidewalk running alongside a gray road. Where's the barn? I asked. The river, the swimming hole. Oh, Sal, my father said. Come on, there's Margaret. He waved to the lady at the door. We have to go back. I forgot something. The lady with the wild red hair opened the door and came out onto the porch. In the back of my closet, I said. Under the floorboards, I put something there and have got to have it. Don't be a goose. Come and see Margaret. I did not want to see Margaret, and I stood there looking around, and that's when I saw the face pressed up against an upstairs window next to it. It was a round girl's face, and it looked afraid. I didn't know it then, but the face belonged to Phoebe Winterbottom, a girl who had a powerful imagination and would become my friend, and who would have many peculiar things happen to her. Not long ago, when I was locked in a car with my grandparents for 6 days, I told them the story of Phoebe, and when I was finished telling them, or maybe even as I was telling them, I realized that the story of Phoebe was like the plaster walls in her old house in Bybanks, Kentucky. My father started chipping away at the plaster in our living room of our house shortly after my mother left us one April morning. Our house was an old farmhouse that my parents had been restoring, room by room. Each night as he waited to hear from my mother, he chipped away at that wall. On the night that we got the bad news that she was not returning, he pounded and pounded on that wall with a chisel and a hammer. At 2 o'clock in the morning, he came up to my room. I was not asleep. He led me downstairs and showed me what he had found. Hidden beneath the wall was a brick fireplace. The reason that Phoebe's story reminds me of that plaster wall and the hidden fireplace is that beneath Phoebe's story was another one. Mine. Chapter 2. The Chickabiddy Starts a Story. It was after all the adventures of Phoebe that my grandparents came up with a plan to drive from Kentucky, Ohio, where they would pick me up, and then the three of us would drive 2,000 miles west to Lewiston, Idaho. This is how I came to be locked in a car with them for nearly a week. It was not a trip that I was eager to take, but it was one I had to take. Gramps had said, "Well, we'll see the whole ding-dong country." Gramps squeezed my cheeks and said, "This trip will give me a chance to be with my favorite chickabiddy again." I am, by the way, their only chickabiddy. My father said that Graham couldn't read maps worth a hill of beans and that I was grateful that I had agreed to go along and help them find their way. I was only 13, and although I did not have a way with maps, it was not really because of that skill that I was going. Well, nor was it to see the whole ding-dong country that Graham and Gramps were going. The real reasons were buried beneath a piles and piles of unsaid things. Some of the real reasons were, Graham and Gramps wanted to see Mama, who was resting peacefully in Lewiston, Ohio, Idaho. Graham and Gramps knew that I wanted to see Mama, but that I was afraid to. Dad wanted to be alone with the red-headed Margaret Cadaver. He had already seen Mama, and he had not taken me. Also, although this wasn't as important, Dad did not trust Graham and Gramps to behave themselves along the way, unless they had me with them. Dad said that if they tried to go on their own, he would save everyone a lot of time and embarrassment by calling the police and having them arrested before they even left the driveway. It might sound a bit extreme for a man to call the police on his own tottery old parents, but when my grandparents got into a car, trouble just naturally followed them like a filly trailing behind a mare. My grandparents' fiddle were my father's parents, full up to the tops of their heads with goodness and sweetness, and mixed in with all that goodness and sweetness was a large dash of peculiarity. This combination made them interesting to know, but you could never predict what they would do or say. Once it was settled that the three of us would go, the journey took on an alarming, expanding need to hurry that was like a walloping great thundercloud assembling around me. During the week before we left, the sounds of the wind was hurry, 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 and at night even the silent darkness whispered rush, rush, rush. I did not think we would ever leave, and yet I did not want to leave. I did not really expect to survive the trip. But I had decided to go, and I would go, and I had to be there on my mother's birthday. This was extremely important. I believed that if I was there on my mother's birthday, I would have a chance to bring her home. If I had said this aloud to my father or to my grandparents, they would have said that I might as well try and catch a fish in the air, so I did not say it aloud. But I believed it. Sometimes I am as ornery and as stubborn as an old donkey. My father says I lean on broken reeds, and we'll get a face full of swamp mud one day. When at last Graham and Grant's Hiddle and I sent out on the first day of the trip, I prayed for the first 30 minutes soft. I prayed that we would not be in an accident. I was terrified of cars and buses. And that we would get there by my mother's birthday, 7 days away. And that we would bring her home. Over and over, I prayed the same thing. I prayed to the trees. This was easier than praying directly to God. There was nearly always a tree nearby. As we pulled onto the Ohio Turnpike, which is the flattest, straightest piece of road in God's whole creation, Graham interrupted my prayer. Salmanica. I should explain right off that my real name is Salmanica Tree Hiddle. Salmanica, my parents thought, was the name of the Indian tribe to which my great-grandmother belonged. My parents were mistaken. The name of the tribe was Seneca. But since my parents did not discover their error until after I was born, and they were, by then, used to my name, it remained Salamanica. My middle name, Tree, comes from your basic tree, a thing of such beauty to my mother that she made it part of my name. She always wanted to be more specific and used Sugar Maple Tree, her very favorite. But Salamanica, Sugar Maple Tree Hiddle, was a bit much for even her. My mother used to call me Salamanica, but after she left, all my grandparents Hiddle called me Salamanica, when they were not calling me Chickapedia. To most other people, I was Sal, and to a few boys who thought they were especially amusing, I was Salamander. In the car, as we started our long journey to Lewiston, Idaho, my grandmother Hiddle said, "Salamanica, why don't you entertain us? What sort of things do you have in mind?" Graham said, "How about a story? Spin us a yarn." I certainly do know heaps of stories, but I learned most of them from Gramps. Graham suggested I tell one about my mother. That I could not do. I had just reached the point where I could stop thinking about her every minute of the day. Gramps said, "Well, then, what about your friends? You got any tales to tell about them?" Instantly, Phoebe Winterbottom came up to my mind. There was certainly a hog's belly full of things I could tell about her. I could tell you an extensively strange story, I warned. "Oh, good," said Graham, "delicious." And that is how I happened to suspend my tree prayers and tell them about Phoebe Winterbottom, her disappearing mother, and the lunatic. Chapter 3, Bravery. Because I first saw Phoebe on the day my father and I moved to Euclid, I began my story of Phoebe with a visit to the red-headed Margaret Cadavers, where I also met Miss Partridge, her elderly mother. Margaret nearly fell over herself being nice to me. "What lovely hair," she said. "Aren't you sweet?" I was not sweet that day. I was being particularly ornery. I wouldn't sit down and I wouldn't look at Margaret. As we were leaving, Margaret whispered to my father, "John, have you told her yet how we met?" My father looked uncomfortable. "No," he said. "I tried, but she doesn't want to know." Now that was the truth, absolutely. Who cares, I thought. Who cares how you met Margaret Cadaver? When at last we left Miss Cadaver and Mrs. Partridge, we drove for approximately 3 minutes. 2 blocks from Margaret Cadaver's was a place where my father and I were going to live. Tiny squirt trees, little birdhouses in a row. And one of those birdhouses was ours. No swimming hole, no barn, no cows, no chicken, no pigs. Instead, a little white house with a miniature patch of green grass in front of it. It wasn't enough grass to keep a cow alive for 5 minutes. "Let's take a tour," my father said, rather too heartily. Walked through the tiny living room into the miniature kitchen and upstairs into my father's pint-sized bedroom and into my pocket-sized bedroom and into the wee bathroom. I looked upstairs at the upstairs window down into the backyard. Half of the tiny yard was a cement patio, and the other half was another patch of grass that our imaginary cow would devour in 2 bites. There was a tall wooden fence all around the yard, and to the left of our yard was another identical fence plot.